Good evening, everyone. It's time to take charge of your life. Hello, this is marriage and family therapist Eleanor Barbaro, your host, inviting you to take charge of your life on WDIY. The theme of this program is that so many events in life happen to us over which we have no control. Our only control is our response to life's situations. It is often said that 90% of life's events happen to us, and 10% is what we make happen. Tonight we talk about what many of us see in other families and read in the news and say, thank goodness that's not our family. We're talking tonight about abuse. What makes a child vulnerable to sexual abuse? How can we teach healthy boundaries, especially in our high-tech world where there doesn't seem to be many boundaries? And how can we help our children develop a sense of respect and a sense of resiliency in a world with so many pressures? My guest this evening is Veronique Valliere, a doctorate of psychology, who has 25 years' experience in clinical psychology, working in individual and group treatment with violent offenders, including domestic and sexual offenders, as well as victims and substance abusers. She is the owner and director of two outpatient treatment centers, Valliere Counseling Associates, an outpatient treatment center for mental health, domestic violence, and victim issues, and forensic treatment services, an outpatient violent offender treatment program. It is a pleasure to welcome Dr. Veronique Valliere to WDIY.
Thank you for having me.
Veronique, how did you get involved in this issue of sexual offense and domestic abuse?
Well, it seems like I was dragged a little by my nose, not intending to, when I went to get my doctorate, but evolved and eventually found my way here, first doing my dissertation on alcohol and sexual assault, and then running an outpatient clinic for substance abuse, domestic violence, and victimization, and ultimately owning and running a violent offender program, as well as I have been appointed to the Pennsylvania Sex Offender Board, or the Megan's Law Board, since 1997.
Well, what makes a child vulnerable? Is it our society today with its television, with our songs, with our everything is just out there? What does that help make a child vulnerable to sexual offense?
To sexual abuse, what makes children the most vulnerable is lack of involved adults and a socialization to compliance to adults and over respecting someone who's nice and kind to you. Often the offenders of children that I've seen have children basically pushed into their hands, you know, be polite, be nice. Why are you doing that? Uncle so-and-so is so nice to you. So children are socialized to that. In terms of becoming sex offenders as well as victims, there's a ongoing, I think we're perpetuating a disregard for relationships and the impact we have on others, as well as children being overindulged and being made self-centered and entitled.
Well, let's go back to an earlier statement. You say that we're training our children to be too nice. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know if it's too nice. I think we have a regard for nice meaning something about your character. And basically, when I'm saying nice, I don't mean kind, I don't mean honest, I don't mean compassionate. I mean a public persona of pro-social behavior and politeness and ease. And so we ask children, or we ask them to overvalue someone else's niceness and have nice perpetuate trust or a high regard, not only that the child should regard that, but that the community regards that as well.
So what you're saying is if somebody is very nice or very very kind, or at least the child perceives it as being kind, are you saying that we are training the child to be responsive to that?
Yes. I think we have some mythology around what a perpetrator is, that they, you know, are these monstrous you know, nasty people that we can see coming. And reality is perpetrators of abuse look much more like one another. In fact, are far more likely to be someone we know than someone we don't, and someone that we actually offer our children to. When a child rebels, for instance, in one person who was abusing this child, the child rebelled against the offender, and instead of listening to that child, the mom consequented that child and said, you know, why are you treating him like that? He's so nice to you. He's so nice to this family. You need to go with him, resulting in, again, another abuse.
Dr. Veronique Valliere, you also think something about our literature that also encourages children to be too nice, particularly our girls. Can you give us some examples about that?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say that makes me consider they're being too nice, but I think we have fairly distorted templates for relationships and evaluating yourself in a relationship, especially for girls. And what I like to use as examples is some of the fairy tales that we show little girls. For example, one of the most profound ones is the idea of the Little Mermaid. And the story is supposedly this romantic fairy tale about finding true love. But in order to be loved, this little mermaid has to give up her biggest gift, which is her voice. And so she has to mute her voice and also mutate her body. She has to give up her beautiful tail and grow legs in order to be loved by this prince.
She has to give up being herself, which is a mermaid.
Absolutely.
She has to give up her whole being in order to be loved by somebody else.
That's very profound, yet we celebrate that. You know, the other ones, the Beauty and the Beast, you know, if you're lovable and nice enough, then you can transform this monster into a prince.
I see. So that there's something in our society and something in our literature, our fairy tales that we read to children, and that gives these messages, and we may not have really been aware of that.
I don't think we're aware of it at all, especially the idea that for girls in particular, that our job is to evaluate ourselves in the context of others comparatively. Are we pretty enough? Are we lovable enough? Does he love us enough to change for us? And what we know is people don't change very well and don't change very easily, especially when we're talking about the characterological issues that perpetuate violence and assault are very ingrained.
What kind of characterological issues are we talking about that are ingrained?
Typically, offenders of assault have two main belief systems that they deal with. They give themselves permission to be violent or abusive. So they feel entitled. They feel they can take what they want. They have a little regard for the impact of their behavior on others and feel special. So that entitlement is a big factor. And the other factor that we have a big responsibility to prevent is the offender somehow believes that the victim deserves it. Either they asked for it, they created a situation where they were too stupid to get out of, or they're possessed or owned by the offender who believes that they've provoked or evoked that response.
If you've just tuned in, you are now listening to Take Charge of Your Life, and this is your host, Eleanor Barbro, and my guest this evening is Dr. Veronique Valliere, who is going to be presenting at a conference sponsored by Project Child on Wednesday morning, April 17th, at the Best Western Lehigh Valley Hotel and Conference Center. And she's going to be talking about just the subject, secrets plus silence plus safety, how to prevent abuse in a complex world. And if you would like to contact and see whether you can come to this program, you might want to call 610-954-9561, extension 340, and see if there's still room for you to attend. You were making some very interesting points. You talked about the the fairy tales that we tell our children. And we're talking about the concept of the offenders, their attitude that they feel everything is coming to them. And somehow or other, we teach the girls in our fairy tale stories, it kind of moves right into what the offenders believe.
That's right.
And we're not doing that on a conscious level. Because if we teach that if we can transform this ugly beast by the way we behave, we're teaching girls to say, oh, if he's being mean, if he's being nasty, I can do something to transform him.
Not only can I transform him, but I must have done something to provoke him. And very often that message is given by the victim's community as well. Often victims have come to me and been told that their therapists have told them, you know, don't provoke him, don't push his buttons. Or their religious leaders have said, you know, you're moving out of your role. So, or they blame the offender's behavior on a myriad of external things, stress, drinking, their own history of abuse, job problems, depression. And none of those create abuse, even though they may be factors that exacerbate someone's potential for abuse.
So what does create abuse? Is it their loss of their selves, or you mentioned entitlement? Do they think they can do anything they want to do without restriction, without anyone interfering?
I believe that's a very major component of abusers, whereas most people, when they feel badly about themselves, they don't do behaviors that'll make them feel worse about themselves. Offenders have an idea that if I feel badly, you better make me feel better, or you're to blame for me feeling badly, or there's an entitlement and a blaming that it is externalized. So the offender will say, you know, I've had a bad day at work, and then I come home and the house isn't clean. You should know better than that. You did this. If the house had been clean, I wouldn't have been so upset. Those kind of things.
I wouldn't have lost my temper. I wouldn't have cursed at you. I wouldn't have said nasty things. I wouldn't have hit you.
That's right.
And therefore, it's your fault because you made this. You made me do this.
And not only do they do that themselves, but they get a tremendous support from the community that perpetuates that message, that externalizes the responsibility. When we see victims of sexual assault, we think, well, why did she go out with him? Or why did she drink that much? Why did she go home with him? So there's all this questioning the victim's decisions as opposed to focusing on the offender's behavior of, well, why did he sexually assault her when she was unconscious as opposed to help her get better?
So this is partly in society and in the way we react and the way we teach our children. And it's not something we're doing on a conscious level. No one wants to hear that they're teaching their children how to be a victim. But the question remains, how do we transform this expectation in our society so that we can have better relationships really defined by intimacy and love rather than sexuality and lust, which is currently going on in our society?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. Is we're such a sexually titillating society. Children are exposed to sexuality everywhere they look. Even I happened to be babysitting and watching the Disney Channel, and the show started with a woman in a little negligee posing, taking pictures of herself. And this is a children's show in the middle of the day Saturday. I didn't understand it at all. So these templates are there, so we have to be aware of them, and we have to teach about intimacy.
Well, we're going to talk more about what we can do to understand and facilitate healthy attachments when we return to Take Charge of Your Life on WDIY.
For program support on WDIY, we thank the Cedar Crest College School of Adult and Graduate Education Master in Art Therapy, where you can channel your love for the arts and healthcare in this growing field while learning to help others emotionally, mentally, and physically through the creation of art. More information at sage.cedarcrest.edu.
We're nearing the end of our pledge buyback, but we still have a few thousand dollars to go. Hi, I'm Rebecca, and I'd like to encourage you to pledge your financial support to WDIY today. If you do so, and we make our goal by Thursday, we'll all enjoy a pledge-free weekend. Sound good? Help us get there. Log on now to WDIY.org and renew your membership, become a new member, or simply give an additional gift. Thanks for listening, and thanks for your support.
Welcome back to Take Charge of Your Life. Hello, this is Eleanor Bobro, your host, marriage and family therapist, and this evening we're talking with Dr. Veronique Valliere, who has 25 years' experience in clinical psychology, working in individual and group treatment with violent offenders, including domestic violence, sexual offenders, and victims and substance abusers. Dr. Valliere will be presenting at a conference on Wednesday, April 17th at the Best Western Lehigh Valley Hotel and Conference Center on Route 512. It's being sponsored by Project Child, and her subjects are going to be strategies for preventing abuse in a complex world. That's a big topic, Dr. Valliere.
It is a very big topic.
And we were just talking about how children are presented with images in their fairy tales.
That's right.
Girls learn that if they try harder, maybe they can help the beast transform.
That's right.
And girls also learn that if the abuser loses his temper or does something mean, it's her fault.
She learns that both from her socialization, and that's something that the offenders prey upon and perpetuate as well.
For example, even in a family, let us say that you have a gentleman in your life who has a quick temper, and mother has set the table, everybody's ready for dinner, dad comes home, and she has made chicken, he really wanted steak. Now, that doesn't seem like a very big problem, but you're dealing with a very difficult person who loses his temper, throws the dishes on the floor and gets very upset. The children cry, go to their room, mother's crying, she didn't mean to offend. And what happens, Dr. Valliere?
What typically happens is the myth is perpetuated that if she would have cooked steak, this would have never happened. Maybe it would have, maybe it wouldn't have. We tend to understand anger as a response to an external thing, but our anger is actually a response to our own belief and value system. If you feel like you deserve dinner the way you want it, in disregard for anything, you're going to become angry when that doesn't go your way.
I think the offender, correct me if I'm wrong, it sounds like the offender thinks, I've had a hard day at work, and the least that I can expect when I come home is to have everything go away the way I want and not the way you want.
It's possible the offender thinks that way. It's possible they're not thinking at all. It's possible they manage their stress by making everybody else hurt. It's possible that they want somebody else to blame or punish for their stress. So the idea that if you made chicken instead of steak is just an illusion, because if she had made steak, he might have wanted chicken. He might have wanted conflict, period. And that's the craziness of abuse, is it takes the things we trust about dealing with people and turns it on his head, like the idea of trust, like the idea of a good person just makes mistakes. Abuse is not a mistake. It's very instrumental and functional for the offender, and it works for them in a variety of ways.
So what can we do to change things? What can we do to change the responses and the abused woman? What can we do to change the behavior of the abuser?
I think the thing is, even when we talk about fairy tales, we talk about the focus is on the female, the princess. And in an assault situation, the focus is typically on the victim. Why did she do this? Why did she make this choice? Why does she stay? Why does she allow this to happen? Why did she get too drunk? When the reality is when in a normal, rational situation where no perpetrator is involved, all those decisions will not result in assault. Most people could go out and get too drunk and not be sexually assaulted. Yet what we do is we focus on why that person drank too much instead of why this person felt like they could sexually assault an unconscious person. So holding the offender accountable for their assault behavior needs to be a priority, and not focus on if the victim didn't do X, then they wouldn't have been assaulted. Because reality is, if the perpetrator didn't decide to assault them, it doesn't matter the situation, they wouldn't have been assaulted.
And we have another problem in our society, and that is very often when there is a victim and there's a large group of perpetrators, like that incident where the young woman was unconscious and raped by...
The Steubenville rape.
The Steubenville rape.
Right.
Comment on that. She was unconscious and these boys raped her while she was unconscious.
That's right. And there was quite a backlash about this girl and what she did wrong and how she ruined these boys' lives because she reported. And so the focus is not on that these boys were rapists. The focus was on that somebody told on them. And that's idea of snitching or tattletaling or telling dilutes the accountability on the perpetrator. The other portion of that is there were bystanders. And this bystander apathy is incredible. And we talk about victims and we talk about perpetrators, but there's a third component to any assaultive situation, and that's the community or the audience. And we need to start socializing children and adults that being a bystander has a profound effect on that assault as well. And so we need to, we've seen children intervene in bullying and protect the victim. So instead of punishing the victim for being vulnerable and failing to protect, we need to embrace somebody's vulnerability and help save them from it and protect them from people who would exploit them.
So we need to have ways of training our society to be take a more active role and not to put up with bystanding when when something is going on.
That's right, because very often I work right now I'm doing a lot of work for the military and prosecuting sexual assault, and so often some of the case comes down to the perpetrator's friends knowing his intention or the community around the offender knowing he was quote-unquote like that. I just talked with somebody whose daughter went for a ride, went to a party with somebody she thought was her friend, and he told her, "I'm not bringing you home unless you have sex with me," and threatened to abandon her. And not only did he threaten to abandon her in a deserted place, but he got all his friends to commit to not riding her home either. And so the idea that a perpetrator can go into an environment like that and be seen and be heard and be tolerated is unacceptable to me.
So what can we do to train our children to have resilience and to be able to stand up? What role can we play so that we protect our children, protect our women, and allow them to find ways and resources in their own lives so that they stand up?
We need to teach them about healthy boundaries and what it means when people violate those boundaries. When you shouldn't have to say no 6 or 7 times and then feel bad because you're being mean. So not only do we need to role model good boundaries and respect, we need to teach our children to be able to have the boundaries they're allowed to have. And I think one of the examples we can discuss is forcing a child to kiss and hug people they don't want to. That's taking away the child's right to their own body. We also need to be good role models ourselves about what is valuable in a person. If you are a woman attempting to teach your child about valuing herself for her own characteristics versus in comparison to others, but you're on the scale all the time talking about your fat or your wrinkles, that's a mixed message. And if you're a father, being a very strong role model as a father, both holding your boys accountable, teaching them empathy and responsibility in relationships, and teaching your daughters that they are loved for their human characteristics and not their physical characteristics are all important things to do.
So that we really have to take a stand, because they're surrounded in television by young people who are modeling and who are doing fat shows and participating in beauty contests. We're surrounded by our now music world, people, you know, singing with or without clothing. It's a very hard world that they're growing up in. How do we help them overcome what they're seeing on all around them?
Well, the biggest thing is communication and education. Often people think that taking a stand about the sexually titillating environment that our children are in means avoiding it. And what we need to take a stand is we need to take a stand for healthy sexuality, open communication around sexual identity and sexual well-being and intimacy.
So that is not really addressed in much of our society, the difference between healthy sexuality and just love, sexuality.
Or just plain objectified sex, or people being objects, or even deviant sexuality, which our children have a great deal of access to in movies, empty sex without relationships, empty sexual evaluation without value of a person. So children aren't learning to connect and understand the reciprocity of relationships. They're just stimulated.
And then they're taught that it's okay for some to respond to that stimulation.
That's right. And if you don't, there could be some kind of, as a boy, if you don't, it could be pejorative for you. You're not like those others. And sexuality is used as a weapon and a slander, the sexual intolerance and sexual blaming that goes on.
So we really need to take a more active role, and that's what you're going to be doing on Wednesday when you speak at a workshop for Project Child at the Best Western Hotel on Wednesday, April
17th,
right. And if you would like to find out some more information, you can call Rochelle Friedman at 610-954-9561, extension 340, to see if there's room in... And if you would like to attend and to get some further information, how may they contact you, Dr. Valliere, if they're interested?
I have a website where our email addresses are and information about trainings, and that's valliercounseling.com.
Valliercounseling.com. So we want to thank you, Dr. Veronique Valliere, for helping us to understand that we as parents and professionals need to do in order to protect our children and ourselves from abusive relationships. We need to understand the techniques that offenders use to exploit and create vulnerability. We need to identify the trauma process and interventions for us, and we need to learn how to address the issues with boundaries with children and help increase their sense of value and resilience. We need to also help them to understand the difference between a loving relationship and simply a sexual relationship. We need to help parents understand their role in developing their children's sense of value, self-respect, and resilience. Thank you, Dr. Veronique Valliere, for helping us to take charge of our lives in a complex world. Thank you again for listening. Thank you, Neil Heaver, producer. See you all on the radio next Monday evening at 6:30 p.m. when I again invite you to take charge of your life on WDIY.